As a dedicated learner, you probably expect the apps you use every single day to be built on this foundation of pure logical order.
Right. Yeah.
Like you tap an icon on your phone, a beautifully designed screen pops up, and it all just, seamlessly flows. It feels so polished.
And that expectation of a perfectly manicured digital world, that is exactly what software developers want you to feel. I mean, the ultimate goal of good engineering is to completely hide the underlying scaffolding from the user.
But if you pull back that curtain, that illusion of perfect order just shatters instantly. You realize you are looking at a landscape that is fundamentally chaotic. And today, we're digging deep into a developer's actual build diary for a project called Pan Pan Mao.
Yeah, it's a fascinating document.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to explore the messy, high pressure, but ultimately brilliant process of taking five completely distinct software applications and fusing them into one unified platform.
Right, what the software industry calls a monorepo. And the diary itself, it isn't just a dry log of someone typing out code. It serves as a masterclass in managing technical debt, engineering for scale, and honestly, the brute force grit required to actually integrate complex digital systems.
Okay, let's unpack this because the sheer volume of work we are looking at here is just staggering. This particular developer sprint covers exactly 111 code commits.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And that was all done in just 3 days.
A blistering pace. I mean, that leaves virtually zero room for error, especially when you're trying to merge completely separate code bases.
Right. And yet, what I really love about this diary is the total transparency of it all. The developer openly admits that out of those 111 commits, practically half of the commit messages were just variations of the phrase fix CS.
Which is so real.
Yeah. So this massive engineering sprint is like an equal split between brilliant architectural triumphs and just mind-numbing pixel pushing.
It perfectly encapsulates the reality of the job, honestly. You are building these massive skyscrapers while simultaneously, scrubbing the baseboards.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And to really appreciate the final victory of this 3-day sprint,
Yeah.
we can't just jump to the finish line. We need to start down at the foundational layer where everything visually just collapsed.
Oh, day two.
Yeah, day two. Because when the developer tried to unify the design framework, moving the styling configuration into a single shared folder, I think it was called packages slash config, all five apps broke simultaneously.
Yeah, the developer vividly dubbed this CSS restoration hell.
CSS restoration hell.
But, it wasn't a catastrophic system crashing failure.
Yeah.
Those are actually sometimes easier to fix because the system usually throws a giant red error telling you exactly where the fatal mistake occurred.
Like line 42 is broken.
Exactly. This was a cascade of really subtle visual bugs, like a background color rendering a shade too dark, or a button rendering inexplicably 2 pixels smaller than its container.
The dreaded subtle UI bug. And the root cause here was a massive collision of CSS variable namespaces, because over time, each of these five apps had evolved entirely separate ecosystems of design rules.
Right, they grew up isolated.
Yeah, and to prevent their internal styles from leaking out and messing up other code, they used namespaces, which is essentially attaching a specific prefix to every design rule to keep them isolated. Like the Bullseye app used design tokens, starting with dash dash z dash. The tarot app used dash dash tarot dash. The astrology app used dash dash zx dash.
Unifying the underlying configuration meant pulling all these distinct, isolated namespaces into the exact same environment.
Right, into one folder.
Right, and they all had to coexist without overwriting each other's rules while still allowing, the Bozzy app to look like Bozzy and the Tarot app to look like Tarot.
It is like taking five wildly independent roommates, moving them all into one house, and trying to force their completely clashing furniture to seamlessly blend in the living room.
That's a great way to put it.
But instead of just throwing things out, you are going around slapping name tags on every single lamp and sofa cushion so nobody accidentally claims someone else's chair. You're just managing the boundaries. But I have to push back here, honestly. The diary shows the developers spent 38 individual commits just fixing these slightly misaligned buttons and restoring those name tags. Was unifying the design actually worth it? Like, why not just leave them as five separate functioning apps with their own separate styles and save yourself the 38 commits of pure misery?
Well, falling into that exact trap is why so many digital platforms remain permanently fragmented and sluggish.
Yeah.
What's fascinating here is the massive long-term architectural win. buried beneath those 38 tedious CSS commits.
Really?
Yeah, because while they were painstakingly fixing pixels, the developer was simultaneously extracting 4 brand new shared code packages.
Ah, okay, the hidden payoff.
Exactly. They extracted a shared package for PDF generation, one for managing chat history, one for the shared chat user interfaces, and one for common React hooks.
Right, and let's quickly clarify React hooks for anyone who hasn't worked with them. They are essentially reusable chunks of logic. Instead of, say, rewriting the complex code for how a drop-down menu opens and closes in every single app, you write a hook once, and any app can just grab that hook and use it.
Spot on. And before this extraction, 3 of the apps each had their own separate chat panel component coded slightly differently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and 3 apps had their own PDF export code using a library called HTML2 Canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all just duplicating the same clunky workflow to turn a web page into a downloadable PDF.
Meaning, if a user found a bug in the PDF exporter in the Bazzi app, you would fix it there, but then you would still have to go manually hunt down and fix the exact same bug in the Tarot app and then again in the Astrology app.
Exactly. It's a maintenance nightmare. But by dragging themselves through the pain of CSS restoration hell and centralizing these tools into packages/PDF folders, a single bug fix now instantly propagates across the entire ecosystem.
That is huge.
It is. The upfront pain of the monorepo buys you effortless scalability later.
Okay, so the internal code is clean. The furniture is name tagged, the living room is organized, but pristine code sitting on a developer's machine means absolutely nothing if the external environment it runs in refuses to cooperate.
Very true.
Because once those shared packages were working, the developer easily plugged in a brand new 6th app, an MBTI personality test.
Right.
But then they had to deploy it into the real world.
And the real world, in this specific context, means the WeChat browser.
Oh boy. Designing an app to work perfectly in your controlled development environment, only to release it into the wild, is like designing a high-performance sports car, engineering every gear perfectly, and then discovering the roads your users actually drive on are made entirely of Jell-O.
I love that.
You can't just drive normally. You need sensors to detect the Jell-O and specialized tires that deploy only when the road gets wobbly.
And the Chinese internet ecosystem requires exactly those kinds of specialized deployments. A staggering percentage of mobile traffic there flows directly through WeChat's built-in browser.
Right.
Users rarely open a standalone browser like Chrome or Safari. They just tap links inside their messaging app. And that built-in browser comes with severe, often undocumented quirks.
Yeah, the diary highlights that it heavily restricts get user media, which is the standard web protocol for accessing a device's camera or microphone.
It's a security thing, but it breaks apps.
Totally. It also severely restricts window.open behaviors, meaning you cannot just pop open a new tab for the user. And it demands entirely different oath flows.
Right. And oath is the standard authorization framework. When you see a button that says log in with Google or log in with WeChat, that relies on an oath flow to securely prove who you are without the app ever seeing your actual password.
Right. It's just the handshake.
Exactly. And WeChat's browser hams this secure handoff much differently than a standard mobile browser.
So to get back to the sports car analogy, you have to write code that detects the precise moment the tires hit the Jell-O.
Yes. And that detection requires incredibly complex user agent sniffing.
Ah.
Because every time a browser visits a web page, it sends a user agent string. It's like a little digital ID badge saying, "Hi, I am Chrome running on an iPhone."
Right.
So the developer had to write custom detection code to check if that ID badge contained the word micro messenger, which identifies WeChat. But they had to account for Android variants, iOS variants, and desktop variants. They also had to check for WXWork, the enterprise WeChat work variant.
Which, amazingly, wasn't even a one-and-done fix. The diary mentions the developer actually had to go back later in pull request 41 to harden this detection system.
Oh, yeah.
Because real devices were throwing false negatives pretending they weren't WeChat when they actually were, because some versions of WeChat embed completely undocumented user agent strings.
They just don't match the official documentation at all.
It's wild. It highlights this exhausting, constant friction between logical, rule-based code and a messy, unpredictable external ecosystem.
It really does.
Yeah.
But unifying the visual code and surviving the hostile external browser environment are huge wins.
Okay.
But the real nervous system of this platform is how it communicates with artificial intelligence.
Yes, the AI backend.
Which brings us to the biggest architectural overhaul of the entire sprint. Standardizing that AI backend.
Right, day 4. The developer created a unified packages/appy folder to dictate exactly how all six of these independent apps talk to the underlying AI models. And let's look at the before and after snapshot here because it is drastic.
Okay.
Before this sprint, each of the apps had its own completely separate streaming route to talk to the AI. And the developer noted there were about 80 lines of duplicated boilerplate code sitting in every single route.
Yeah. And boilerplate is sort of the necessary evil of software development.
Mm-hmm.
It's the highly repetitive structural code you have to write just to set up the basic plumbing before you can actually do anything uniquely useful.
Yeah.
And anytime humans copy and paste 80 lines of plumbing, errors creep in.
And this boilerplate was handling incredibly complex plumbing, too. It was setting up readable screens and formatting server sent events, or SSE.
We should probably clarify those two concepts because they are crucial to modern AI apps.
Absolutely.
When you use ChatGPT and the text appears on your screen word by word, that is a readable stream utilizing server sent events. Instead of the server waiting, say, 10 seconds to generate the whole essay and sending it as one giant block of text, SSE holds the connection open, and the readable stream drips the data down to your screen character by character.
Right. It creates that smooth typing effect we all expect now.
Exactly.
But setting that up, along with handling connection errors and managing the deduction of user credits, took 80 lines of code. And those 80 lines were copied and pasted over 15 times across the platform.
Which means if you decide to change the way you deduct user credits, you are manually hunting down 15 different files to change the exact same logic.
It's just a recipe for bugs.
Yeah. But the unified API package solved this by replacing all of that scattered plumbing with a single elegant helper function called Create AI Stream Response.
Create AI Stream Response.
Yeah.
And it utilizes some incredibly smart lifecycle hooks.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Yeah, it has an in-events hook, which immediately fires off initial data to the user's screen while the AI is still waking up and thinking. It has an on-complete hook that quietly saves the conversation to the database and logs the financial API costs in the background.
Nice.
It handles failures gracefully with an on-error hook. And my personal favorite part is the refund credits on-error hook, which acts as an automatic safety net, refunding the user's digital wallet if the AI connection suddenly snaps mid-sentence.
It essentially contains the entire chaotic lifecycle of an AI interaction within a perfectly predictable, robust wrapper.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting and maybe a little terrifying. The diary reveals that there were 52 different API routes that needed to be migrated over to this new unified helper function. Doing that manually is a full day of exhausting, highly repetitive typing where a single missed comma breaks the app.
Oh, without a doubt.
Instead, the developer used an AI coding assistant called Claude Code. They showed the AI just one single example of the new pattern and let it loose to rewrite all 52 core API routes across the entire platform.
Wow.
In just 1 hour.
Honestly, isn't it terrifying to let an autonomous AI rip through 52 core routes of your infrastructure based on one example? What if it hallucinates a tiny logical error into every single file?
Well, if you view AI as a black box of creative problem solving, yeah, it sounds deeply irresponsible. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, it reveals why the developer's architectural choices were so effective.
How so?
Because that new Create A-Stream Response architecture was so rigidly structured, with those clearly defined lifecycle hooks we just talked about, the AI was not being asked to think creatively. It was performing strict, constrained pattern matching. So it was just looking at the old scattered logic, finding the part about credits, and dropping it into the new on-complete box.
Precisely. It is a shift in how we understand AI's current utility in software engineering. We often focus on AI inventing novel algorithms from scratch, but its true power right now is eliminating massive amounts of tedious boilerplate.
Right.
The human engineer designs the rigid high-level mold, and the AI just rapidly pours the concrete. It frees the human to focus purely on the system's architecture.
So the human builds a highly efficient, beautifully structured AI streaming pipeline. But sending data back and forth incredibly fast is only a good thing if you can actually control what that AI is saying.
Which is a huge transition point here. Because when dealing with the Chinese market, which PanPan Mao targets, an AI generating unchecked, unfiltered content is not merely a brand risk, it is a critical legal liability.
Right.
This requires an entirely different kind of system architecture, a context-aware safety layer.
The developer had to implement a sensitive word filter. But the diary points out a massive hurdle here. You absolutely cannot use a standard off-the-shelf profanity filter.
Not for this app.
No, because Pan Pan Mao deals heavily in metaphysics content, tarot, bazi, astrology, and metaphysics inherently uses vocabulary that sounds incredibly alarming if you remove the context.
Yeah, the diary provides excellent examples of this collision. Legitimate astrological terms on the platform include Swan Ming, which means fortune telling, Po Kai, which translates to wealth loss, and Tao Hua Ji, meaning a romantic disaster.
If you plug in a naive keyword filter, you end up blocking half of your own platform's legitimate content.
Thankfully.
It is like hiring a bouncer for an exclusive club and telling them no red shirts allowed under any circumstances, so they blindly tackle a paramedic trying to enter the building just because they're wearing a red uniform.
Right.
You don't need a bouncer who memorizes a list of band colors. You need a bouncer who observes the situation and understands the context of why the person is there.
Exactly. And in computer science, building that smarter, context-aware bouncer often involves a DFA, or a deterministic finite automaton.
Okay, let's break that down because DFA sounds like a term pulled directly from a graduate-level math textbook. How does that actually filter words better than a standard search?
Well, a standard search takes a whole sentence and scans it against a massive dictionary of banned words over and over. It is slow, and it completely lacks nuance. A DFA approach takes the list of sensitive words and builds them into a highly structured data tree called a trie.
Like a branching flowchart of individual
That
letters.
is the perfect way to visualize it. As the AI streams its response text down to the user, the DSA filter evaluates the text character by character in real time, navigating down the branches of this tree.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so if the characters start traveling down a forbidden branch, the system knows immediately. It is incredibly fast and allows for complex contextual boundaries. The diary notes this initial implementation simply blocked the entire message if a sensitive path was triggered, but it laid the necessary foundation for more surgical filtering later on.
Wow. And the technical filtering was really only half of the compliance battle. The developer also had to rapidly draft and implement bilingual terms of service and privacy policies.
Yeah, the diary is an excellent reminder of the unglamorous realities of global software deployment. You are inextricably tied to the legal frameworks of your target markets.
You really are.
The developer noted that these initial policies were completely rewritten a few weeks later in pull request 83, splitting into separate Chinese and English versions specifically to integrate mandatory compliance clauses for China's generative AI regulations.
It is just a dizzying context switch. I mean, you are debugging React hooks and CSS namespaces 1 minute and drafting international AI regulatory compliance protocols the next.
The mental agility required is intense.
It really is. Which brings us to the absolute climax of this document. It is 11 p.m. on the final day of the sprint.
The moment where the scaffolding either holds or collapses.
Yes. The developer fires up all six applications locally on their machine. They log into the platform with one single user account, and they just watch.
Must have been nerve-wracking.
They watch as the unified credit balances sync flawlessly across all the different browser tabs. One single login, one unified database, six distinct products functioning perfectly together. The monorepo actually worked.
It is a profoundly satisfying moment for an engineer. It's that singular point where days of chaotic, frustrating integration finally snap into logical order.
Yeah, 3 days prior, there were five completely fractured apps limping along with clashing styles and duplicated code. 111 commits later, there is one cohesive, powerful platform. So what does this all mean for you? The next time you open an app on your phone and it seamlessly transitions from one screen to the next and the data syncs perfectly to your laptop, remember this diary. Remember that the effortless digital experiences you rely on every single day are built entirely on the back of these chaotic, high-pressure, meticulously orchestrated sprints. There is a mountain of invisible, grueling labor behind every smooth tap of a screen.
There really is. And that reality leaves us with a lingering question, something to ponder the next time you unlock your device. We implicitly trust these seamless digital experiences with our work, our finances, and our private conversations. But when you consider the sheer mind-boggling complexity required to unify just one developer's project, navigating the silent collisions of CSS variables, actively fighting against the hidden quirks of built-in browsers, and engineering real-time character filters just to survive cultural compliance, how fragile is the vast interconnected digital infrastructure we actually depend on every single day?
Makes you look at that little perfectly rounded app icon a bit differently, doesn't it? Thank you for exploring the architecture of the chaos with us on this deep dive.